went into industry, and also I spent some time in retail pharmacy, community pharmacy. I went out west and taught at the University of Manitoba for a while, and back to Toronto, ended up as the registrar of the Ontario College of Pharmacists, long since retired from that, and also an adjunct professor at the U of T. This whole thing about pharmacare really should be about the patients, about the people. Rob asked me earlier why I'm interested in this. Well, I'll tell you why I'm interested. I was working in a pharmacy right across the road from the Regent Park development, way back when. And one day, a girl walked in with a prescription for her mother. And she came up to me, and I was behind the dispensary, and she said to me, my mom was wondering if we could get half of this prescription. She said, we're not sure that we can pay for it. And I looked at the prescription. It was for an antibiotic. And, of course, you can't do that. You've got to take the whole course of treatment. So I said to her, well, really, you know, we have to give you all of this, and you tell your mom that she's going to have to take it until it's all gone, or she's not going to get better. Well, we can't pay for it. And I said, come back later and talk about that when your mom's better. And they did, and it worked out. And ever since then, I've had in the back of my mind that girl. And I thought to myself, that was a long time ago, I thought to myself, you know, someday we're going to have universal drug coverage. And that was pretty near 60 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we're going to get it now. I sure hope we are. So that's really why I'm interested in it. I can tell you more stories about it because we all pharmacists have run into this over the years where people come in, have a prescription, they're not sure if they can get it filled. They have to ask about the price, what's going to happen. And it hasn't changed much for that group of people. Now, of course, lots of people are now covered. As was mentioned earlier, most people that have a job in a large company have some sort of a drug plan that's paid for by the company.
Mm-hmm.
Seniors, folks on social assistance are also covered. But there's that roughly 22% of people that are paying out of pocket, and out of that percentage, there's quite a number of people that just can't afford it. So that's why I'm in it.
So you told us before we went to air, you went to the federal government websites to see, you know, what the various parties are saying about pharmacare. And as I alluded to in the piece as I was reading it, the Conservative Party's position right now is extending the life of patents for prescriptions and for prescription drugs. But there really is no discussion on whether there's going to be a pharmacare. And I was even, quite frankly, shocked by Rona Ambrose's candor here, quite frankly, because I've heard her say exactly the opposite, saying that it's time for us to get together and start bulk purchasing. I mean, she's even said in the House of Commons that, you know, unfortunately, that's provincial jurisdiction and we don't talk about that. So it's kind of odd that they would be saying that. Now, the Liberals decided in their convention last February that they were going to look at the possibility of pharmacare, and the NDP have also alluded to a possible pharmacare strategy as well. Do you think there's a lot of hope right now at the federal level that we're going to see this? I mean, everyone's so focused on, you know, let's balance the budget, let's get the debt under control, and all of these other things. Is this something that you think federal members could be convinced of?
Before we go too much farther, I think it would be really a good thing so that our listeners can understand what we're talking about when we talk about pharmacare. Can we at least take a moment just before we get into the politics? What are we talking about when we're talking about a pharmacare program? What does it mean?
First of all, as I said earlier, it's all about the patients. It's a national publicly funded plan that would provide pharmaceutical care to all Canadians. That's the plan. Pharmacare is a term that's used. Pharmaceutical strategy is another term that's being used. But there are really three key policy objectives in a national pharmacare plan. The first one would be to promote equitable access to necessary medication. Let people that aren't getting it got to have access to it.
Mm-hmm.
To ensure financial protection and equity. People, obviously, we've learned that something like 3.5 million Canadians are not having their prescriptions filled because they can't afford it. It's a financial matter.
Mm-hmm.
And to achieve the third objective in this kind of a program would be to achieve system efficiency. because now we have plans all across the country. Ontario has the Ontario Drug Benefit Plan. The other provinces have and territories have their own plans. Each of those plans has its own administration, and they're not consistent in terms of the type of coverage that they give. So it's providing drugs to people, everybody at an equal basis right across the country.
Now, is there any other public policy that would be similar to this, that they would be a good comparator so people understand?
Medicare would be. We have a national health care plan, which has been around back in the 60s under the Hall Commission. It was first recommended by the Hall Commission. So, yeah, it Medicare isn't really complete without drug coverage.
Mm-hmm. But when you talk about Medicare, I mean, that's one of the things that a lot of people complain about, is that it's so costly and it's such a big part of our budget. I mean, we're sitting here, our own local hospital is going through massive cuts, and, you know, we're our service that we were supposed to be getting, we're not getting. There's privatization that's so problematic. Why would we want to embrace a similar plan when the other one's in such chaos?
Okay, we can't afford not to. What's happening is that when people are not taking their medication, judicious prescribing of drugs, and appropriate use by the patient can prevent illness,
mm-hmm.
It can manage symptoms, and it can in some cases cure. Not always, but it can cure. So what we're looking at here is a situation where many people who do not get their prescriptions dispensed, and I've spoken to local physicians who tell me that they know in some cases, when they write a prescription for a patient, they know when that patient goes out the door,
mm-hmm.
they're not going to get that prescription filled. And that means that patient's diagnosis essentially is wasted, or not wasted, but it's certainly not going to be very... not going to be a very, very good outcome from mm-hmm. the fact that they didn't take the medication. So I think you have to look at it from the standpoint of completing the system that we have. Now, people say it's too expensive, but in actual fact, healthcare costs in Ontario in the last 4 to 5 years have kind of flatlined. They've only increased on an average about 2%, so that we're looking at just about the rate of inflation, really.
Right.
I know there are a lot of complaints about the cost, but we can't afford not to do it.
But then if there are provincial plans, and these are in place, and you talk about a national plan, a lot of people say, but you know what? Each province is different. Each province is unique. Mm-hmm. And they're supposedly under the Constitution are supposed to look after health care.
Yeah. Right.
So why get the federal government involved?
Well, it wouldn't be just the federal government. Let's just back up for a minute. First of all, there's a patchwork of coverage throughout the country. And so if you go to... If you live in one province, you may be paying more or less for your medication. You may not get it at all, depending on what your status is. The argument for having a national plan is that, and all the studies that have been done, including the one that was referred to earlier, suggests that if we had a national formulary, a drug formulary. Now, a drug formulary is a list of drugs that's put out by each provincial government, health ministry, and it lists the benefits that people get, and it lists the prices that the government will pay the pharmacist for dispensing the medication. And if you had a national formulary, it would be, first of all, uniform for the whole country, but secondly, you'd have... the opportunity to negotiate prices with the manufacturers based on 35 million people instead of, 14 or 15 million in Ontario and maybe 250,000 in Prince Edward Island.
Mm-hmm.
So you get this
disparity.
Economies of scale. Mm-hmm. But the key to it, Robert, is to have a national formulary that's developed not by the federal government, but in concert with the federal government. There has to be leadership somewhere. Now, the Federation of the provinces, they get together and they do their thing. But it seems to me, and I'm not alone in this, but it seems to me that you have to have federal leadership to give it the incentive to bring people together to form some sort of a coalescence of ideas, form a national formulary that's uniform across the country. Everybody gets treated the same way. You can negotiate prices on the basis of economies of scale.
So now that we're talking about political will, I think Dave.
Well, this is, and that's what I was alluding to with my question, frankly, with regards to there being no pharmacy strategy. To get to the point that you're making, as far as national leadership, I mean, the only way the Confederation can negotiate with the pharmaceuticals is with the cooperation and at the behest of the provincial governments if they decided to work as one unit. And so, yes, the federal Minister of Health can negotiate on behalf of all Canadians a pharmacare or a pharmaceutical price, if you will, for various prescription drugs. And there has been a serious unwillingness to do that at the federal level with this current health minister and with the previous health minister. So it does beg the question, why? If it's going to save so much money, and they have even admitted it. I mean, even Rona Ambrose admits this. You know, they know it's going to save money, but they're more concerned about protecting the patents, just like Brian Mulroney was back in the 1980s when he extended the life of patents to another 14 years back then. So there needs to be a national strategy. So that's going to involve the federal government. They've already dropped the ball on the National Health Act. I mean, you know, you refer to the Hall Commission and the National Health Act that we have or had in this country where the federal government paid 50 cents on the dollar. They don't do that anymore. And they're going to be doing even less as the next budgets come rolling down. It's that simple. This government is committed to extricating itself from social health. It's the responsibility of the provinces. And by making it solely the responsibility of the provinces and ergo not kicking in the money necessary for coverage, they make it unaffordable. They're not paying their fair share. They're forcing the provinces to have to pick and choose between services. Do we provide health care or do we provide infrastructure? Do we provide health care or do we give people a better deal on something else? People want health care, and they want their federal components to be a party to that. And part of it, as you said, I mean, this was actually part of the original commission. PharmaCare was actually supposed to be part of the universal health care program that was implemented under the Liberal government, under Mr. Pearson, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
So, I mean, the long and short of it is we've been waiting now close to 50 years for something to be done on this. Every time there's an opportunity for it to happen, it doesn't happen. So there's always a reason why. There's always an excuse from government. But what we're talking about today is the fact that A, we can't afford not to do this, and B, study after study after study is showing that we can save billions of dollars a year, not just at the government level, but even at the commercial and corporate level.
Well, that's a very important point, because if the study that we're just talking about here that was released on Monday indicates the billions of dollars that the private sector is going to save, and that means that companies that are now paying for drug plans for their employees are going to be able to save money. That's like giving them a tax break.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's just like giving them a tax break.
Yeah. Can I follow up a little bit on
Please
the
do.
Studies? You mentioned the Hall Commission. There have been so many studies since then, like you could just enumerate them. There was the National Forum on Health way back in 1997. There was a Royal Commission on the Future of Healthcare, the Romano Commission, a Senate committee chaired by Michael Kirby.
Mm-hmm.
There was the Provincial Premier's Conference, and this is something that a lot of people don't know, is that in 2004, the provincial ministers of health got together and they decided that it would be a good idea for the federal government to do it. They all agreed.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, as you say, it just didn't go anywhere.
Well, we had a minority government at the time and then another minority government at the federal level.
Yeah, but getting back to where the momentum is coming from, there's been a couple of really good research papers in addition to these people, like Morgan and his group in UBC. Mm-hmm. Has done a lot of terrific work. But there's another fellow, Marc-André Gagnon at Carleton University. He's done a terrific job. And he did a study in 2010 for the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives.
Right.
And at that point, he was saying it was economically possible and socially desirable. So there's really no question that academics and people that have studied this and looked at it, and they've studied it every way they possibly can study it. And that study that came out on Monday is a terrific study. And Morgan is a good researcher.
But where is the impetus really going to come from, Bill? I mean, we've talked about this. You know, we've enumerated all the studies that have been done. The cases have been made time mm-hmm. and time and time again. And, you know, as Dave was mentioning earlier, I mean, there just doesn't seem to be a political will. The Liberals are saying it's possible. The NDP are saying it's possible. What is it going to take for a serious discussion like this to take place so that we can see some action?
I think more programs like this one.
Well, either that or someone's going to have to die. You know, unfortunately, and I'm going to put it out there, you know, it sounds to me like unless somebody dies because they couldn't get their prescription filled, unless we suddenly have a mass die-off, which, by the way, I would argue we're already experiencing.
Well, we
right
don't
now
know.
I'm sure there are a large number of people. I mean, I myself, okay, I suffer from a genetic disorder. It's called alpha-1 antitrypsin. In British Columbia, the medication that I need is covered. In the province of Ontario, it isn't. So that's just an example of the disparity. Now, how many times do I got to say to my my doctor, oh, don't bother writing me a prescription. I'll take some free samples if you got them. But otherwise, you might as well just keep the prescription because there's no way I can fill it. And that's the way it is for me. You know, and it's like that for so many other people.
Well, one of the things that worries me is that, you know, as our economy is changing and we are moving to a just-in-time labor force, precarious labor, mm-hmm. people are working part-time, they're not getting the benefit packages. I mean, you mentioned earlier a statistic. The one that I had was that 36% of Canadians are covered by a private sector plan through benefits. So there's huge numbers of people out there working that are not getting benefits.
That's right.
And I think that this is where the vulnerability has come. I mean, for the last 20 or 30 years, if you've had a good job, you've got a good health care plan, the private sector's looked after you. And so we have had affordable health, affordable prescriptions. But I think as this economy changes, this is going to bring the pressure to bear on people that we're going to need something, you're right. What are we going to do?
Well, exactly. And is that what you think it's going to take, Bill? Before
I think it. I think it will. I think that public pressure. This has been a terrific week for pharmacare. I mean, there's been so much in the papers about it, and it flares up. I've been following this for some time, just looking at the literature and following the newspapers and so on. And I think we need to have more publicity about it. I think people need to talk about it. But I have seen an increase in interest, not just this week, but it's been coming ever since 2010, when Gagnon first brought out his paper. That got a lot of play. And subsequently, the Morgan papers, they've been good as well.
Mm-hmm.
The argument that the feds use, the jurisdictional argument, I really don't think holds water because, you know, they're involved now in drug legislation. They're involved in the Patent Act. Mm-hmm. They're involved in the Food and Drugs Act. They're involved in the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act.
Mm-hmm.
They decide what drugs go on prescription.
Well, they're debating in the House right now safe injection sites.
Yes.
So if they can debate safe injection sites, why can't they debate
that's right.
a national pharmacare strategy?
And yeah, that's right. And as I said earlier, I think it's not just a question of the federal government doing it. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a collaborative mm-hmm. effort here. All the provinces, all the territories, the federal government get together, do something, come up with some sort of a national commission or something that looks at this and just grabs it.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because if there would be such a benefit to business to not have to pay for a drug plan for employees, what was the figure you used? 8.2 billion would be saved by business, but also governments. would save huge amounts of money. The civil service, you know, gets a drug plan and a lot of employees. So, I mean, even the government would save money if they were to implement this. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's up to individuals. I think that, you know, the business community has a huge stake in this. Mm-hmm. And if they're so anxious to sort of cut costs and do this, here's a great opportunity to take it on. And it would benefit everybody in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that really is the role of the federal government. I mean, they're supposed to have the best interest of all Canadians at heart. And yet, as of December last year, I mean, they're in negotiations with a new CETA deal, the new big trade deal with the European Union, which, quite frankly, is going to definitely undermine the ability or wherewithal of our government, even at the federal, probably at the provincial levels, given the new trade restrictions. I mean, here we are. We've got a government that has the ability to, as I say, we said a moment ago, butt in on these other issues that are health related, and yet are in the process right now of undermining any type of universal health care pharmacare strategy by signing a trade deal with Europe.
But doesn't it make sense, though, that if they're pushing to extend patents for drug companies, one of the things I noticed about this, and maybe Bill, you could talk a bit about this, is that a lot of times we're talking about generic drugs. And really, that's where the buying power is going to come. That's where the cost savings are going to come. And that's not the guys that are doing the research. That's not the guys that are producing the and I wonder if that's part of the dynamic in the background that's going on here.
I think probably it is. This whole issue of generic versus brand name is a big one. It's been going on for years.
Mm-hmm.
Way back in the mid-70s when the provincial government decided they were going to have a drug benefit plan, they immediately recognized that they couldn't afford one if they didn't have what we call product selection. And that means that you have a generic product which is equivalent in its action to a brand name product, and they have to undergo a rigorous determination for that. But once it was decided that they were going to have a drug benefit plan, they knew that they could not have one. They wouldn't be able to afford it without product selection. So back in the early 70s, the provincial government brought in legislation which permitted product selection, and subsequently the formularies which came out, which were the drug benefit formulary, and they call it the comparative drug index, mm-hmm. which is a listing of drugs by their therapeutic classification. And it includes, of course, many drugs by the different manufacturers, but they list a unit cost, and it works out to, you know, the number of units that are prescribed times the unit cost plus a dispensing fee is how it's priced out. But without product selection and without generic drugs, we couldn't have a drug benefit plan.
I don't know, but what do you think, Dave? I mean, do you think this is really the tension that's going on in the background? Is that the drug industry, the pharmaceutical industry, is in there saying, don't go for this plan, because if you do, you're going to undermine what
Absolutely.
We're doing here?
Absolutely. And here's the other specter in the room for, and my listeners know I'm going to say this. We've got Chapter 11 of the North American Free Trade Agreement that would allow companies to sue our federal government if they enact legislation that would diminish their ability to earn a profit. If they were to tackle this issue and force companies, I mean, right now they're trying to force the government to extend the life of their patents. And that's being done by force. It's not being done by stealth. They're saying straight up, if you don't extend the life of our patents, we will sue you. That's what's going on. And our federal government, which, I mean, we've been sued 170 times since the North American Free Trade Agreement was signed. We have never gone to court. We have settled every single case. It's insane. We got a government that signs trade deals. And I mean, like Mr. Butler says in this piece regarding CETA, if you want to implement universal health care, then you must say no to trade deals like CETA. And I said no to free trade in the 80s. I said no to NAFTA in the 80s. I was arrested protesting these deals because I knew the long-term implications. I mean, it's all fine and wonderful to say, let's trade with people, but let's trade on an even keel here. Let's not, I've got to give up this if I'm going to trade with you. How is that even a trade? There's nothing fair about it. And that's talking about fair access by multinational corporations to our market, which is exactly what these deals are about. Pharmacare is about caring about the people. It's, you mean, as you said a moment ago, Bill, you can't what's the point of having someone go in for a diagnosis at a doctor when there's no backing that up? You know, it's like taking your car to a mechanic. He gives you the overhaul, says you're going to need this work, and you just have a tow truck haul you out of there because you don't have the money to pay for it.
I wonder if we can shame them into doing it. Canada's the only developed country with a universal health care that does not have universal drug coverage.
I mean, that's right.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to pay some bills. We'll be right back with more of the Drive Time, more of our discussion on PharmaCare in just a few minutes.
I just got married, and I wanted to leave my collection of flannel shirts to my new wife, Lucille, in case of an unfortunate hunting accident. But my cousin Bob was a lousy shot, let me tell you. Jim McGrath made it easy to make a will so that my three previous wives could not touch my stuff. He's been lawyering for 30 years, and let me tell you, he knows what he's doing. Plus, he's a real nice guy. Call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999 and tell him Cletus sent you.
Starting your own business is an exciting time in your life, but are you aware of your legal responsibilities as a business owner? Jim McGrath specializes in business law and knows what needs to be done to protect you and your investment. Jim has been a lawyer for over 30 years and understands the law, so you don't have to. As a local resident and an entrepreneur himself, Jim McGrath is a trusted source in our community for business owners just like you. Call 905-373-1999 and let Jim McGrath give you the legal peace of mind you need.
For over 35 years, Northumberland Security Incorporated has been providing everything necessary for physical and electronic security. From locks, alarms, safes, access control to surveillance systems, and handicapped door operators. We are virtually a one-stop personal and property security center, operating from Pickering to Peterborough to Picton and everywhere in between. Visit us at 22 King Street West in Coburg, online at northumberlandsecurity.com, or call 905-372-8951, the professional security team.
The story you are about to hear is true.
Ed White fixed my refrigerator.
And?
He did a great job. Now I don't need to buy a new fridge. And if I don't get a new fridge, then I won't need a whole new kitchen to go with it. So my guy is saying Ed White saved him $20,000.
Guys, save 20 grand. Call Ed White Appliance Service in Port Hope at 905-885-7109.
Yes, it is worth fixing.
Hometown Bingo is your community connection for fun and excitement 7 days a week.
The Hometown Bingo Customer Appreciation Bingo is on April 1st at 10 a.m. It's free bingo. And regular game prizes are $20 and $30 in Hometown Bingo Bucks. Jackpot game full card is $100 in Hometown Bingo Bucks and $100 cash. Enjoy a free luncheon, including dessert and beverage.
Hometown Bingo in Colburn, 884 Division Street, just south of Elgin on the east side. And check out the website at hometownbingo.ca.
Are you a business owner thinking of retiring or selling your business within the next 3 years? If so, call Sunbelt Business Brokers. Their team of professionals make it a worry-free, confidential process and ensure that you end up with maximum dollars. In the past year, they've helped more than 3,000 business owners achieve their goals. Advanced planning can save on taxes and minimize risk. Sunbelt works confidentially so your clients, staff, and suppliers will not know that you are selling. Call Sunbelt today at 1-888-647-7182 or check sunbeltcanada.com.
Hi, I'm Pete Fisher. Join me and Dave Glover Fridays at 5 during the Drive Time for Life in the Fishbowl right here on Northumberland 89.7.
Welcome back to the Drive Time, listeners. Joining me, Bill Wensley and Rob Washburn. We're talking about a national PharmaCare strategy, why it is needed, why it's necessary. And, you know, during the break, we were talking, and I was talking as well. As many of you already know, I have a lung disorder, which is treatable, but quite frankly, there's no cure. So the reality is this. I have currently about 20% lung function. That's my situation, 15 to 20% on a good day. And I have no coverage, virtually no coverage at all. So as I said to my doctor today, I went in there today, I had a problem with my shoulder. And she offered to write me a prescription, and I just told her, don't bother writing me a prescription. If you got some samples, I'll take the free samples, but I can't. I don't have a prescription plan. I don't have coverage like so many other people out there. And she actually said to me, you know what? What I'm going to do when the rep comes by, because they drop samples all the time. They got boatloads of them, as you know, being a pharmacist or former pharmacist. And so she said that she's going to see if she can't get him to drop me off a boatload of samples, which is wonderful. And I hope she can do that. There's no promises here. But, I mean, as a Canadian, as a person who is, you know, a taxpayer who receives universal health care and thanks for that, it really does seem like a bit of a wasted effort. When I've gone to my doctor today, and this is a problem, I actually have an appointment with a specialist. I get to see specialists and all kinds of things like that. But when it comes down to the actual treatment, you know, like the man who brings his car to the diagnostician and says, thank you for the diagnosis, I'll have the tow truck put it in my driveway. You know, if you don't have the money to cover it, then you're not going to get better.
You know, I wonder if there's anybody listening in right now that might have a similar story to that. I mean, you can't be alone on that. Bill, have you other cases that you know?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Robert, I do. Not too long ago, I was talking to a man in his 40s, working for a little bit above minimum wage. He doesn't have a drug plan. He's not under social assistance, so he doesn't get that coverage.
Mm-hmm.
He had an infection, and he went to a hospital, not here, but he went to a hospital, and they checked him over, and they said, well, you've got an infection. You need to take an antibiotic. I'll write you a prescription. And so he wrote the prescription, and the doctor wrote the prescription, and the fellow said, look, how much is this going to cost? And the doctor said, I don't know, but it's fairly expensive. I said, well, I don't have any money to buy that prescription. And he was sent away with the advice that go and get some Tylenol, and that'll bring your fever down, and you'll get better. Well, he did, but he didn't get better as fast as he should have. And that to me, that was just unfortunate.
It's almost medieval.
Well, you know, we love to talk about universal health care. You know, one of the things I talked about when I talk about universal health care is that, you know, I mean, so many people in the United States, they get sick. The leading cause of bankruptcy in the United States right now is illness. But I would argue that here in Canada, I mean, when you've got people having to decide whether to pay their hydro or buy groceries, the last thing they can afford is to get sick. And, you know, when you get sick and you can't do anything about it, you can't go to work sick. You can't go and make all your other co-workers sick. So now you got to stay home. You got no coverage. There's no guarantee you're going to be able to maintain your employment at that point. I mean, why would your boss keep you around, especially if you're earning just a little over minimum wage? And, I mean, this government talks about all the new jobs that were created, both provincial and federally, over the last year or so, saying that we're recovering. But the majority of those jobs, no benefits, part-time for the most part, or temporary. You know, if you're working for a temp company, again,
right.
No coverage. So, you know, I mean, the number of people that have coverage right now, that number is going to be on the decline in the next decade or so. I can guarantee you of that. And what we're going to see is more and more people in the same boat that I'm in. And I'm sure, as Rob said, if you're a listener out there and you're going through the same thing, you don't necessarily have to identify yourself. We don't need to get your name if you don't want to give us your name. But if you have a similar story, if you will, a nightmare of healthcare where you've been prescribed something that you know is going to make you better, and you haven't had the financial ability to get that medication, or maybe you have a loved one who's in a similar situation, we'd love to talk to you about that, because these are the stories that are going to relate to your member of parliament. These are the stories that are going to relate to your member of provincial parliament. You know, it's all fine and wonderful to talk about the platitudes and do the photo ops and stand with your big checks, but when it comes down to it, if somebody can't get an antibiotic, I mean, there's stories today in the newspaper and in the media about another people with measles. You got Ebola now. People in somebody's suspected case in Sunnybrook Hospital. These are people that could be treated with antibiotics. They're going to be sent away. They're going to be given a prescription. And how many of them can't afford to pay for it, Bill? What do you think the numbers are? They're obviously higher than they were years ago.
Well, they say it's about 10%.
Phenomenal.
So that's a conservative guesstimate, I'm sure.
Oh, I think so. Yeah.
So if they want to call, it's 905-372-2391 or 905-372-2321. Bill, what is covered in Ontario? What's covered by the Ontario Drug Benefit?
Okay. Well, we have seniors, 65 and over. We have those people under social are receiving social assistance.
So that's workfare or that's disability, right?
Yeah, and we have those with high drug costs compared to their income. Trillium drug program, which is deals with more or less catastrophic cases that are related and related back to the person's income. People in long-term care, homes for special care, or enrolled in home care. So we're covered at both ends of the spectrum and in the middle too, but then there's a part in the middle that isn't covered, and that's the group we're talking about, the 22% of the people that mm-hmm. pay out of their pocket and whatever percentage of that they can't afford. So there's good coverage for those people. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that there are people who are not covered. You mm-hmm. talk to seniors, people in my category, I didn't know that people didn't, you know, because I've been getting it for 15 years mm-hmm. or 10 years or whatever it might be. So they just don't know. So it's important that people understand that there are those people out there that are not covered at the present time, and they should be.
Now, what about going forward then? Okay. What can be done? What actions can be taken?
Well, apart from the public outcry, which I think we need to have, I've worked out some suggestions to help move the discussion forward. I don't know whether this it's kind of academic in a way, but it's the way I feel about it. First of all, we have to develop a national formulary that lists those drugs that are supplied as benefits to all Canadians. We have to institute drug coverage for all. We have to replace the present patchwork of coverage across the country. And I think it would be a good idea to establish a Canadian Drug Benefit Agency with authority to establish and carry out a national pharmacare plan, something that grabs it in the center and gets it going. Negotiate drug prices based on competitive bidding process to get the best price for that mm-hmm. we possibly can, based on 35 million people instead of smaller right. numbers, which it's all done provincially now. Ensure a rigorous drug assessment process, which looks at all the drugs and decides whether they should be included in the formulary based on whether they're going to work, what the cost is, taking all of that. I mean, this is done now. It just needs to be continued, and it needs to be very rigorous. We have to enlist, and this is very important, we have to enlist the rigorous, the cooperation of prescribers and pharmacists to enhance prudent prescribing and good drug monitoring.
What does that mean? Just explain that.
It means you have to be sure that you're writing the medical profession, the people that are prescribing, they're doing a terrific job, don't get me wrong. But they have to be constantly concerned about the prescriptions they write, and that's what I call prudent prescribing, which means the right drug at the right time for the right person. I'm not saying they don't do it, but we can always make improvements. Drug monitoring, pharmacists at the present time are charged with the responsibility of dispensing prescriptions and looking at their patients' records and making sure that folks are not getting things that they shouldn't be getting, whether there may be a drug interaction or something like that. Mm-hmm. Enhance that drug monitoring. That's very, very important as part of this program. And to debate and put to rest the argument that a national drug benefit plan is too costly and that there are too many jurisdictional issues, because I think that those are both red herrings. We mm-hmm. just got to get rid of that. And finally, the whole thing's going to depend on cooperation between the federal government people, the provinces, the territories. And there has to be goodwill here. I mean, there just has to be. Otherwise, it's not going to work.
And I don't know about, what do you think, Dave, about, you know, in terms of federal-provincial relationships? I mean, is this something the current government?
Well, the current government, forget it. That's not going to happen. We've got a prime minister that doesn't even want to meet with the first ministers. Now, the health ministers have met. So, I mean, when it comes to the individual caucus members, the ministries of health for the provinces and the minister of health federally, I mean, they'll get in a room. It's wonderful that Ms. Ambrose will sit down with the provincial counterparts. But the problem for her is she doesn't have any authority. She really can't say anything. I mean, the Prime Minister has the final say. And the same could have been said, true, of Mr. Kretchen's government before. I mean, a lot of people blame them for a lot of the increases in health care provincially because of the cuts that were made during the 1990s before we had 13 consecutive surplus budgets. So, I mean, we really have to ask ourselves, and we need to ask our members of Parliament and our members of provincial Parliament, is this not something that's worthwhile? I mean, this is like the organ donor debate that's being had right now across the country. I mean, this is a no-brainer, you know? As the Conservative members love to say, we all put our pants on one leg at a time. We all get sick. We should all have the ability to at least get better.
Well, we've got an upcoming federal election. I mean, is this a good time to be talking about it? Or you know, are we going to be shoveled into the issues,
yeah,
you know?
Well, you know what? It beats the heck out of talking about whether someone can wear a hijab or a niqab. It beats the heck out of talking about whether or not we're for terror or whether we like terrorists or walking down. What was it the one minister said, MP Tote said, you either want terrorists arrested or you think terrorists are victims too. I mean, this is the narrative we're getting. We've got an election coming up here. We've got a federal government telling us to be very afraid of terrorists. They're lurking everywhere. Oh, by the way, we are the most trusted government. I mean, as Benjamin Netanyahu said in his speech yesterday, people know they can trust us. Well, I would argue that we know we can't trust them. You know, they're not willing to follow through on a universal health pharmacare plan, which, quite frankly, is a no-brainer. They're not willing to help with a national housing strategy, which, quite frankly, is a no-brainer. They're not willing to offer up a national or a royal commission on missing and murdered Aboriginal women. I mean, this government at every single turn tells us and tells Canadians every single day that, you know what, we don't care about you.
But here's the nub of it, though. I mean, you want people to take action, and yet seniors are already looked after, so they really don't have a spade in the ground on this one. The wealthy, they've already got the means to pay for the drugs. They've got a spade in the ground. They don't need to worry about this. People who are full employed and have a benefit package with their employment, they don't need to worry about this. So unless you're an incredibly selfless individual, you know, there isn't going to be a big movement amongst Canadians to make this a difference. I mean, I agree. It's a no-brainer. But how are you going to get when the three largest groups who vote aren't motivated?
Well, let's see how long they're that unmotivated. Because as we know, these programs are becoming more and more expensive at every provincial level. We're going to see a point where seniors are going to have to start paying user fees, if you will, for some of these programs. We're already seeing cutbacks at union negotiating tables on what's being covered. I mean, every union in the province of Ontario and across the country knows that this is something that's on the negotiating table. All right. I mean, this is one of the reasons why, if we look at the history of the CAW, we know the CAW was formed because this was the deal that was struck in the U.S. with the United Auto Workers. And they said, no, we already have coverage. But so how long will we have coverage? And do we have to wait until nobody has coverage for everyone to get upset? Or should we just say, you know what? It's in the best interest. I mean, we ban smoking in public places because it's not healthy. And at the same time, we don't provide prescription drugs for people who aren't healthy.
What do you think, Bill? What's it going to take?
I think it's going to take a really concerted effort on the part of people who are interested in the healthcare field. I think it needs support from, certainly it's getting support from the Canadian Medical Association. They're all behind it. We have to convince people that are already covered that there are something like 3.5 million people in Canada who say they're not getting their prescriptions filled. In some cases, not always, but in some cases, because they can't afford it. And I just think we have to appeal to people and say to them, hey, we got to fix this.
Do we know if any of the local candidates have come out on this?
Not to my knowledge, but I don't know that it's been an issue that anyone's really raised. I mean, in this upcoming federal election, listeners, and you get to decide what are going to be the issues here. It's up to us to determine what the issues are. We can't allow the government, which has a very specific agenda, to drive the narrative and tell us what the issues are. We're on the ground. We're the ones living this day to day. So you may have coverage now. But how many people had coverage when they were working for Collins and Aikman and then all of a sudden woke up that Monday morning and didn't have a job anymore and are now working, you know, at a local Tim Hortons with no benefits? I mean, that's the reality. I mean, it's all fine to say, oh, well, it doesn't affect me. You know, it's like when I was talking to a friend one time about the Bob Ray days, you know, the days of action. And I was talking to a union representative who said to me, well, you know what? He broke a contract. I said, yeah, but the contract was so that 25,000 public sector workers didn't lose their jobs. And his next words out of his mouth were, well, I had seniority. I wasn't going to lose my job. So again, it's okay as long as you have it. But when it starts to affect you, oh my goodness, you better wake up and you better stop walking on my toes. So it's time for all of us to realize that this is, if it's not affecting you today, this will affect you down the road.
That's right. I think another way of bringing this forward, and it may not sound like very much, but it's like shows like this. Letters to the editor. I've had a few letters to the editor of the Toronto Star published supporting PharmaCare. I think we also have to remember that there was an ECOS poll done in June of 2013, I think, that showed that 78% of Canadians support the implementation of a universal plan. Well, we've just got to somehow get across to those people that the only way that's going to happen is to vote for the people that say they're going to do it.
That's right.
And I think that's what we're missing right now is nobody's saying they're going to do it. They say it's possible. So others say no, but I think somebody has to take a concrete step. And I think, you know, mm-hmm. when we're looking for leadership, I think, you know, with the upcoming federal election, we really need to hear a clarion call, something really crystal clear that says, you know, this is going to take place.
Well, it's going to take political will. That's the bottom line. And until we have that political will, it's just not going to happen. It's that simple. So we need to convince our members and everyone running across this country, and I have listeners across this country, talk to your member of parliament. Forget about talking to him. Let them know how you feel, because, you know, it's all fine and wonderful to have a lovely conversation, maybe sit down for a coffee chat, but let them know that this affects you. You know, I've told my member, this affects me. This affects me every single day. It affects whether or not I can go outside. If I don't have my medication, and the listeners know, I mean, they can hear me wheezing online. I want to thank my guest today has been Bill Wensley. We have been talking about a national PharmaCare strategy, something that we think is very necessary. Also, Rob Washburn, who is a regular contributor here on Northumberland 89.7. You have been listening to Consider This Live. I'm Dave Glover. We are out of here. We'll be back tomorrow with more of your drive time.
Northumberland 89.7 is CFWN, truly local radio, serving Northumberland County, a not-for-profit volunteer community radio station.